Welcome to the Fallout Lore, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Welcome back to the Fallout Lorecast. This is your host, Tom or Robots, and I have a wonderful crew with me this week. We're doing something a little bit different. For longtime listeners of the show, you know that the show is primarily about the lore of Fallout, and we're going to talk about some Fallout lore in this episode as well. But I also like to use this platform to highlight other creators, because the Fallout creators in this space are what make it so special and also add to the community, which is so wonderful. And joining me again is Chipmunk. He's back with a new podcast. You might know him as the guy, or one of the guys behind the real life get togethers in Vegas and in Appalachia every year. He's pretty much the guy who sets up a lot of that stuff and does a lot of the work, the hard work behind the scenes to make that possible. But he's also a creator and has a new show, Chip Shot, which is out there. The first two episodes are live right now. And Chip, welcome back to the show. I'm so excited to talk about this show that you've done. What would be the best way to describe this? Because on my listening, I'm getting a lot of these like vintage sitcom kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of self-aware vibes from it. Is that a good description?
Yes, Tom, it is. And thank you for having us. But that hits it on the mark. It's a prequel to the YouTube Chipmunk show that was done. We shot in 76, but this, of course, is a podcast, which gives us a lot more flexibility, and we can do so much more than we could do visually. But what it is a standard sitcom. And if you were going to say, you know, what's the premise, it's literally 30 Rock meets Saturday Night Live's Point Counterpoint meets Between Two Ferns, with a lot of Fallout violence and fun and all that. Mm-hmm. So it really is and it's fast paced. No episode is more than 28 minutes. And it does absolutely follow sitcom format. And it's got an incredible cast of voice artists who you've heard on other podcasts and have fantastic credits behind them, and are the most talented cast I could possibly have put together.
Yeah,
and I'm thrilled by that.
And we've got a lot of them here with us.
That's what Chip Shot is.
Yeah.
And
sorry, I want to jump in and say we've got a lot of them with us here today, which, by the way, is thank you all for taking the time to join us. Here, let's go through, and we're going to introduce each person. Please give a brief explanation of who you are, where people might know you from, and the character you play on the show. And Chip, we'll start with you. I mean, we've already done your introduction, but who are you and what character do you play on the show?
Well, I play Chipmunk, who's a overly optimistic pioneer scout who thinks he can fix the world. And he's running this radio station in Morgantown with his buddies. And that's where it starts. So I play that character. I've played him for years, and he is actually my alter ego that everyone sees at the Wasteland Jamboree and Mojave Mayhem. And he has a whole life beyond that. And it's in the podcast. It's in the show. It's in the travel show.
Can you?
Chip gets around.
Yeah. Can you, in his voice, explain why his head is so big? This is fun.
Well, you know, let's get into that, shall we? Okay, so gosh, I was doing the commercials for Cooper or for as Vault Boy before the head, because I looked like him. And apparently the Enclave thought, oh, there's a perfect test subject for a little FEV experimentation. So yeah, they did that, and poof. Instant bobblehead. Thanks so much, Enclave.
I love you. Nice. Yeah, I love the fact you bring this up in the first episode. I love the fact that the reason why he has a Fallout bobblehead that's really big on top of his body is due to FEV experimentation. That's great. That's very Fallout. But it's also super silly because it's a bobblehead. And he's such a funny character because he's so naive and like positive and trusting in a world that just is trying to destroy you at every turn. So that's wonderful. All right, so let's continue through the list. CJ, welcome to the show. Can you introduce yourself and explain a little bit about your character and do a quick little voice for us?
Yeah, my name is CJ Ryan. I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me. I haven't actually had that many like credits that people might know. The one that comes to mind is I got cast as a bunch of mutants in the Fallout New Vegas mod Encounters of the Mojave.
Mojave. Yeah, either way. Either way works.
Yeah. And on this show, I primarily play Beanie, who is a horrible, squirrely little man that I love playing. He's very opportunistic and, to use the what I hope is still current lingo, a simp for the very mean boss lady.
Okay. What does he sound like?
Miss Victoria, I'm here and happy as a clam to serve.
Nice. Very good. Very
that
good.
Line just brings him right on out.
That's great. That's great. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Cal, introduce yourself and who do you play?
Hi, I'm Cal. I'm actually one of the co-producers with Brian and lead writer. I have the dubious privilege of playing a whole host of different characters, actually, from the mayor of Grafton to responders, a fire breather character called Jack Riker. And there are quite a few others. I just can't recall them off the top of my head. I think I also voice a ghoul bartender. I do a little bit of everything. I've been in a few other stuff, no major roles. I've been in some of the Chad podcast stuff, Once Upon a Wasteland, True Vault Escapades, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to do just sort of like minor roles, but mostly I just do some writing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, can you do one of the characters for us?
Ah, who to choose? I guess I'd go with Jack Riker because I suppose it is most distinctive from my normal voice, given that I am normally British.
Not from the Americas at all.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. But I also do Grafton's mayor, who some of you might remember from popular Bethesda game Fallout 76.
Very good. Awesome. Well, thanks, Cal. And then Phil's here. Phil, who are you and what character do you do?
I'm Phil Lonadier. Thanks for having me. Some might have heard my voice in the Fallout New Vegas mod Long 15. I voiced four characters there. I also co-created and act in Appalachia, a Fallout 76 story. The mm-hmm. spinoff show from Chad.
Nice.
I play Xander Nash in that series. But in Chip Shot, I voiced the announcer guy who provides bits of insight, irreverent commentary, and whimsical narration.
Right. The whole transatlantic kind of old-timey announcer thing. Very good. Very good. That's awesome. That's so fun. Well, thanks, Phil. Thanks for joining us. Hazardous, welcome to the show. Who are you and what do you, which Hi. Character do you voice?
Well, in the very first episode, I'm the Camp Lewis computer, which was fun to do.
Mm-hmm. And then typically I'm just DJ Julie. Got little odd ends, but I'm not really as famous as everyone else here. This is actually my first time doing anything voice acting related.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, welcome. So, welcome to voice acting, I guess. it's like I'm the president of voice acting in here. I'm welcoming you into the thing, but I'm not. I just do a lore podcast. Yeah. But hey, I'm glad to have you. That's exciting. It's always, you got to start somewhere, right?
Yep. And I'm glad I have this opportunity. So
yeah. Well, welcome. Welcome. And then we have Rob. Rob, who are you and what character do you voice?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. My name's Rob, or Math Demigod. Some folks just call me Math because I'm a math teacher in real life. My previous characters include Private Lawson from the MODIS Files, as well as all of the mole miners in that show. I've done a few characters for Once Upon a Wasteland, Last Days of Appalachia, a couple of others. And I play Chip's cousin, Roy Monk, executive producer of Chipmunk Radio Show and resident animated statue. You know, thanks to the FEV nonsense we discussed earlier.
Nice. Very cool. And then one more, River. Welcome to the show. Who are you and what character do you voice?
Hi, thank you very much. Again, relatively new to everything. I am on the writing team, which usually means I sit in meetings and spout out ideas when they come to me. And also on the production side of things in terms of publishing it. So if things go wrong or uploads are at the wrong time, it's usually my fault. But I also happen to play Steelpike, who is a writer and dubiously talented actor who is far too confident in their own abilities, given the level of talent they possess.
Very cool. Very cool. Man, this is a fun cast and lots of fun characters on the show already. Even I've listened to the first episode and already in the first episode, you get a lot of your voices I'm starting to recognize. And this is fun, Chip. Now, for our audience, they're probably wondering some things about, I mean, most of them haven't listened to the show yet. So go look up Chip Shot, go listen, check it out. See, it might be something you really like. And there's going to be inspiration behind these shows. As a Fallout creator myself and so many other people I've connected through to all these years, one of the things I've learned is that there are different parts of Fallout lore that resonate with different people in different ways. We find inspiration maybe in, you know, the creepy side of it, or maybe in the technology side of it, or maybe a specific character or two are just, oh, they're the companions that we always go to when we replay a certain game or whatever. I want to get some insight about inspirations from Fallout and maybe even other things, because you are pulling from sitcoms, like you mentioned. Like, Chip, what comes to mind when you thought about putting this show together? Was there something specific in a Fallout game that you were like, oh, I can build off of that? That idea right there is a seed, or it's foundational.
Well, it's funny you say that, and this is the first time I've ever actually talked about this, and I appreciate it. Chipmunk actually evolved because absolutely love, the thing that I focus on in Fallout is the art, and especially the advertising art, the Vault-Tec art, the, you know, whatever it is, the pre-war art, and and the music. And what I love especially about it is the fact that it's wonderfully ironic. You know, you've got the dark Fallout world and yet this 1950s, you know, Mad Men style art. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful to me. So Vault Boy was the pinnacle of that. And it's also so ironic. And thank goodness the show picked up on that, because they run with it big time. But when I saw, I never played the first two games. Fallout 3 is the first one I played, but I saw, what was it, Tactics, where Vault Boy is a companion character. And when I read the text, and he's saying golly and gosh and jeepers, it's like, oh, they got it. They totally, from day one, they were doing it. And I know everybody hates that, you know, they're not big into it, but I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool if he was actually a character? And when I started playing 76, and then, you know, when Wastelanders came out and the Pioneer Scouts emerged, it's like, okay, I'm going to put this together and create a character that's a living Vault Boy. And that's what I did. So, and then Chipmunk has just grown from there. But it allowed me to not only immerse in Fallout in a big way, but also create a character that I really, really relate to, because of course I was that gosh golly gee jeepers Boy Scout and still am to a lot of ways. So it really, that had a huge impact, and that's what for me developed that character, and it spawned everything else. I mean, the travel show to me is like, it hits it on more notes than anything else I do, but I think the podcast will overtake that now.
Yeah, well, the podcast has, obviously, it's a story, right? So the story is just going to keep going. And from what I know about your character, having seen some of your other stuff, he maintains a certain positivity, even in lieu of the most terrible situations, which is, of course, comedic, like, you know, fodder. Like, it's comedic. Like, that is a good scenario to have, somebody who is disconnected and disjointed from reality in a way that's interesting and then leads to other things or decisions that are unexpected or whatever. So I'm sure you have this overarching perspective on like where the character's going throughout the show and all of that, but I'm sure we'll have to get there with you.
It's funny. And absolutely. It because we're doing a prequel, we know how the story ends, and it's because it ends at the, well, technically it doesn't, but the last episode of the sitcom on the YouTube show, Chipmunk Show, it encapsulates the whole story arc in a big way, because his whole thing early on is he wants to fix the world one cheery smile at a time. Mm-hmm. And as he goes through life, he realizes that's, and Roy's a big factor in this, that that's just not possible no matter what.
Right.
But he never falls to that darkness, and he gets to the point where he realizes the best you can do is just be an example of what could be.
Right.
And
Roy is really there to provide the realism counterpoint, right? Roy is there to kind of provide the realism to Chip's optimism, which is why I really love the character interactions between the two of us.
Yeah, that dynamic is interesting. And also Chip being like never actually being able to fix the world, but realizing that it's still worth the effort. Like, I think this is, I mean, I come from a philosophy background. This is one of those like moral ideas where people see people like this and they think they're like goody goodies, right? And they discount them. And they think that they're ignorant and naive and that they always will be. And some of those things are generally usually true about people like that. But what they fail to see is the amount of actual like internal strength and drive that it takes to maintain a positive thing, to even back up from, well, maybe I can't save the world, but maybe I can make somebody's world better one person at a time. You know, like that there's strength underneath that I think a lot of people fail to recognize. Do you feel like that's the same, Chip? Do you feel like does that make sense for Chip Monk as a character?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And when you talk about drawing from, and you know, as we're always told as writers, if you're going to write well, you have to write what you know. You have to write from the heart. And that comes from the heart. I mean, that very much is me in a lot of ways. I mean, Chip Monk is the most autobio character I've ever created. And the fact of the matter is, you can't deliver human stories and you can't deliver layers of characters until you tap into those exact kind of things. The bigger picture, the more philosophical things, the emotion, the human condition. So, you know, that's where, and again, this writing team, you know, and we're doing comedy, but still good comedy is human comedy.
Right, right.
I mean, you look at any Big Bang episode, there's always a heart in it. And you know, that's what we strive for.
Yeah. Well,
Tom, you mentioned philosophy before, and we don't have, you know, majors and minors over here in the UK, but philosophy was a huge part of my degree program. And so I'm so glad you said that, because there's a huge underpinning of this philosophical underpinning throughout any kind of Fallout setting that we tried to, I guess, bring to life in this. Despite the fact that it is so thoroughly and completely influenced by, you know, wacky wasteland stuff, you know, that sort of Fallout New Vegas style, sometimes weird stuff just kind of happens in the wasteland. Sure. And you see that, you know, if you play E76, you see that in terms of the encounters that you have. And we try to kind of play into that, you know, without spoiling, you know, any, you know, major details and what's coming up on the show. You know, we go into some of the kind of figures that pop up in Fallout 76 and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And try to really tap into the kind of in-world lore that's created in those games, but presenting it in a way that is, I guess, friendly for people. Even if you like, if you know nothing about Fallout, you can engage with this and it will make sense to you. Being as I have a proud mother who is keen on trying to take an interest in anything that I do, my mum actually listened to the first two episodes, knows nothing about Fallout, but thought it was the best thing ever, which, you know, it's my mum. It probably isn't the best thing ever.
Yeah, right.
But
well, you have a very supportive mother.
Yeah, I do. I do. Shout out to Maria. You know, it goes to show there's a comedy there that transcends the actual setting. You know, I tried to sell this to my mum before as like, okay, think talk show in a post-apocalyptic setting.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the look on her face. It was not positive.
right,
but,
right.
But she's there listening to it, and she was really, really overwhelmed by how funny she found it. And I think, you know, part of that is because my mum's sense of humor and mine are quite similar, and funnily enough, you know, my sense of humor, and Brian's quite similar. And it's kind of gelled really well to produce this kind of, like Brian said before, 30 Rock meets, you know, point counterpoint meets post-apocalyptic America meets, well, you take your pick of any kind of British comedy as well, because there's a lot of that style of comedy as well.
Yeah, and you guys are doing a audio show, so there's no visuals other than the cool artwork you guys have done for it and have had other artists do, which you can talk about in a minute. But because of that, so much has to be telegraphed through the way the characters speak, the sound effects, the things they say, how they say things. I think a lot of people don't understand what goes into thinking through all of that. And the vibe I get is that so much of the writing and performance is self-aware. And I say this in a way because there will be people who turn on the first episode and they immediately, and this is the internet, you're going to get every opinion everywhere. Like if you've put anything out on the internet, there are going to be lovers, there's going to be haters. It's just the way it is. And one of the things that happens way too often on the internet is somebody will listen to the first 2 minutes of something and then they'll go, I know what this is, and they turn it off, and they just make a brash, quick judgment of some sort. And my thoughts for your show is that the people who will only give this 2 minutes will miss out on the fact that it is self-aware. They're going to turn it on, and they're going to go, well, this is a little cheesy and over the top, completely unaware that that's on purpose, that's not like, that's the point, that's the beginning, and then it seems like the show then goes from that and then gets more real, even though there's this shiny veneer, kind of like with the character Chipmunk, right? On the outside, he looks ridiculous. He's a walking around vault boy with a giant head, but deep down inside, there's real stuff there, right? There's real care. There's real person. There's still stuff going on. And I feel like the show as a whole is kind of like that. If you just give it a quick glance, you're going to be like, well, maybe this is kind of cheesy. I don't know if this is the kind of thing I normally listen to, because probably you don't. But then if you give it a little bit more of a chance, you're going to realize that there's a lot more underneath that surface. Does that feel accurate, River?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah?
CJ? If I may, I had a moment where before, I'm sorry, I don't know if that was someone yelling or a car.
It's all right. No problem.
I had a moment when I first looked at the script and I was like, wow, this is really cheap. But then I kept reading and I'm so glad. But that you are right that there are people who have those low attention spans, those very cynical surface level understandings, and they won't give it a chance. And speaking as someone who has a way shorter attention span than I want to have, don't give in to that impulse. Give it a shot. And that goes for most media, because most media is made for a reason. So I'm going to get off my soapbox now.
Yeah, it's just a thing, right? People make quick judgments. They feel like it's the TikTokification of our attention spans, right? If it doesn't hit you in the first 5 seconds, just swipe to the next one, right? Right. River, did you want to say something about that too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, discussing philosophy, and I do have an interest in moral philosophy, not quite to the extent that I think Kyle has. So he can flex on that. But I do come from a psychology background. That was what my degree was in. And a lot of it was behavioral. And I think there are kind of layers to it, because of course people will look at it and see the kind of veneer and think, this isn't for me. But actually, I think as well, that can be the case with Fallout. Because if you just think of a very, very brief synopsis, it's post-apocalyptic, it's, you know, like an RPG survival game, there are guns in it, you know, enemies. That's not everyone's cup of tea. But then you go into it and actually it's the characters within that setting that really make it. And it's some of the characters that are almost comically evil, you know, like the Enclave, some of them, or the people who are so perseverant in their attempt to rebuild this world, even though everything is crumbling around them still.
Right, right. The Preston Garveys who almost give up, but then they keep going, you know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that is reflected in the show really well. And I'm glad that, because the cast usually see the scripts right as we've finalized them. So I'm very glad that it's obvious even to them on a first read without even hearing it with the full effects and everything, but actually it's these characters, and a lot of the time the interaction between the characters that does a lot of the heavy lifting. It was mentioned earlier by Math, like the stuff between Chip and Roy, or even just Chip and any of the other characters, really is fundamental in telling that story, in the same way that in the Fallout universe, the characters have to exist within their setting for them to really make sense and come to life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that has been done, in my opinion, really, really well. And hopefully will grab the attentions of some people who typically wouldn't be into this sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Well, I'd like to move on from that just to kind of, I just wanted to put that to bed because I know there will be people who will fall into that trap, and they're going, because this isn't, a lot of these other shows have been doing, a lot of shows have been doing Fallout content and Fallout stories and voice acting and all of that. And they all have their own flavor, but this one comes across very intentionally cheesy, for lack of a, and Chip's back, cheesy for lack of a better phrase, or at least it appears to be. And then you got to dig a little bit deeper, right? But here, I want to get into some of the other inspiration behind not just the show, but some of your characters, because there are so many Fallout games at this point. Fallout 76 has been going for years now. There are a lot of characters in the series who have been voice acted by very, very good voice actors who are a part of the community and come out to these events and things like that. I'm sure, like me, you guys have probably been highly influenced by their characters, their delivery, those situations. Who would like to share some insight into maybe one of your characters and some of the inspiration behind it from Fallout?
I'm happy to talk about from the writer's perspective, but Rob, if you want to go first, I'm
no, please, Cal, you first.
There are a whole load of characters, obviously, that we've come up with. Some of which, you know, they're familiar faces from the games, or familiar voices, even. So, in the case of DJ Julie, she's the voice of you know, Appalachia Radio in Fallout 76, and she comes up so often, and it's beautiful, honestly. You just wait. As soon as you hear Hazard's DJ Julie, I think you'll love what we've done with her. We all come from like slightly different walks of life. So, I mean, I think my proudest characters that I've developed, and River can talk more to this since River, he plays one of them, still Pike and Merlot. Now, they start off as incredibly, incredibly minor characters. Of course, and CJ plays Merlot. So River, yes, plays Still Pike, CJ plays Merlot. They are your classic art students. Students of the arts. They go around with their, you know, Super 8 cameras, thinking they're incredibly, you know, insightful with these really artsy takes and stuff
like
that.
We're going to get a camera angle nobody's ever done before. And it's
exactly.
Like, okay.
It's, you know, this is so, you know, this is going to blow everybody's minds, you know, that kind of, you know, level of stuff. And it just falls so flat in this post-apocalyptic wasteland where you've got super mutants and you know, ghouls everywhere. No one's interested in these artsy shots or anything, and yet they are. It goes back to what you were saying before. They're still going for it. You know, they're still going to be published authors and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that I really enjoyed, because I've been that artsy person who thinks they're going to blow everyone's minds with this, you know, really insightful piece, really pretentious poem that I'm looking back, you know, when I wrote when I was 18 or something, and I'm thinking, wow, that is bad. You know, there's a lot of that goes into it. I'm sure CJ and River can talk that, more about how they've played them.
I was going to dedicate my portion of inspiration to Merlot, because as Chip can attest, I very much surprised myself, but Chip, you said I got Beanie in like one go. So there wasn't really that much evolution for Beanie, but Merlot, there were like three full different variations that I thought was very interesting, because Merlot sounds largely like me, like has my sort of natural accent, just playing it up. You're not even going to pay us. But Merlot started off kind of British adjacent by like the gravity of the energy who was bringing out. I don't know how else.
So as an American, like we have a mixed group here. Some of us are from the US. Some of us are.
When I'm saying British, UK. I more mean the British Isles. It's like, it's not English, but it like, to right. an American, it sounds English-ish.
Right. That's what I'm getting to, is that as an American, we often hear, say, UK accents as being slightly elevated from our common speech. And even if they're bad, even if they're not very good or not even very accurate, and that's true, that's evidence right there for the transatlantic accent, which isn't a real accent at all. Yeah. But Americans,
technically, there's exactly one county in Ohio that does happen to talk like that.
Well, there you go. But for most Americans, that still feels fancier, right? There's something about it, right? And totally get it.
Yeah. So in the case. I'm sparing you all a diatribe on how every culture has their version of that, which I could talk for hours on this because I am a nerd and I love learning. And this is one of the things that I fixated on for a while. But originally, my first take on Merlot was, I'm just going to pull the first line I remember. It's so subversive. It actually hurts. Like it. Almost drawing on Pegasus from Yu-Gi-Oh, which wasn't intentional, but
yeah.
And then River started doing Stillpike, and Chip, you were like, "Well, we need to distinguish them a little bit more." And I was like, "Okay, well, what do I even do?"
I'm imagining I Team Rocket.
I can't bring out this energy in its potency. With like a normal American accent, because I didn't occur to me to just do my own voice, because I do happen to be very pretentious sounding at times. But then I was like, I'm going to try French. And it almost worked. But you were like, no, wait, save that. Hold on.
I think that's an accent that will sound pretentious to both the people in the US and the UK.
It's a proper handshake moment there, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. We all agree about how pretentious the French are.
Subversive. It actually hurts. Like it's not quite right, but and then it just ended up eventually becoming me, but with more pretentiousness, more drama kid energy than like I already normally sound very dramatic, but then it's just like from here up to here, and it just. Emphasize and just let that oscillation, and that was really it was weirdly difficult, as obvious as it was in hindsight. It took a lot of time to get Merlot to how he is right now.
Yeah, it sounds like he went on a journey with it. River, did you have a similar journey with your character, or how did that work out? I like chewing gum. You like chewing gum. Probably. Most of us like chewing gum. But what if your gum actually did something more than just taste good and make your breath better? I mean, think about it. You brush in the morning, you brush in the evening, but then you go for like all day without taking care of your teeth. And that's why I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. It's not really regular chewing gum. It's remineralized chewing gum. It's basically oral care in gum form. It tastes great, and you chew it for like 5 or 10 minutes, you spit it out, you move on, or you keep on chewing it if you like it. And sometimes I have a second one, or a third one. I mean, they taste real good. Can you blame me? And it's made from hydroxyapatite. I hope I pronounced that correctly. It's the same mineral that the enamel on your teeth is made from. It comes from natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it's got this like firm, satisfying chew. It's not so plasticky or rubbery. And did I mention I really like the flavor? I really like the flavor. And I'm feeling healthier about my mouth and my teeth. It's a good feeling. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making and packing and shipping gum every day, made in the US. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush by Nathan and Sons. That's Underbrush from Nathan and Sons.
So mine was a little bit more simple, actually, and a lot of that was because I looked at the role and went, and immediately went to Cal, who birthed them from his mind, and kind of asked what he was feeling with it. And you're welcome for that phrase. And I know you directed me towards Only Murders in the Building and the sisters in that. And I
the brothers,
the brothers, sisters there. And I took like a few listens through and I went, this works. Because I have spent most of my life surrounded by pretentious British drama school kids. So it's not tired, but it's something that I know well. And it didn't quite work for the setting, I think. I listened to the reference and combined that in my head with other characters that I know. I mean, there's no one I think that comes to mind right now who's, you know, quite as dramatic, but it's that sort of almost caricature style of person that the Fallout games do really well, mm-hmm. where they are every distilled part of a personality you can think of condensed down into what is left when it, you know, when the dust settles.
Right. Right.
So, I think a lot of that was less accent work and more kind of just intonation and working out, you know, why it is that the characters are the way that they are. But fortunately, it came relatively easy when the voice got there. I went, nope, it's locked. I've got it. We're here.
And let me, before we jump to Rob and Phil, let me just say one thing about this cast and their characters. But Kel and I both agree that we create these characters, we create the story arcs, but we want the voice actors to make them their own. So they really have a lot of creativity, flexible creativity to make the character their own. And Rob has done that beautifully with Roy. These CJ and River have done that with their characters of Steelpike and Merlot and everyone else. But that's always, I never want to lock anybody into what exactly the script says. It's like interpret it, but run with it and make it your own. And they're doing it wonderfully.
Yeah. I have
this. Really kind of intimidating for me when I was coming in as Roy, because I'm aware that Roy is an established character, someone who has been on the Chipmunk show quite a lot. And I will admit that I have not watched the Chipmunk show. I've watched the travel show, but I don't know anything about Roy that comes in the future. And I kind of take that as a strength because I want to try to make the character mine instead of trying to play to the character that I know he's going to become later. So that was really tough for me to start off with. I was really, thankfully, got a lot of really good encouragement from Chip and from Cal to let me know that I'm doing a good job of making this character my own instead of trying to play to the character that he will eventually become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
Rob, because I was going to send you a clip. Because we had that whole discussion about how Roy walks. And there's a clip from season three where he's in pacing back and forth in a room in Skyrim. And it's like, it is so stilted. And I'm like, oh, I got to send this to Rob. But no, I'm not going to do it because he's going to hear the voice.
For context.
I'm not going
to. For context. And this really speaks to how well Rob has done here. Because Roy is a statue. Which is why, you know, this whole idea of him walking around and stuff. Well, like that was a writer's room meeting that we weren't expecting to have. You know, how does a statue walk around Appalachia?
Someone's going to ask the question.
Someone is going to ask the question. And you know what? We've got an answer. But Rob is honestly a phenomenal talent. Bringing a statue to life is, you know, like it's a challenge that. Well, it's just a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like, did you draw any inspiration from any of the Fallout characters? There's not a statue that I know of, but
think of the weird things, Thrigul, you know, that kind of idea, you know.
Yeah, okay.
From Fallout, what, 3, I think it was. And also part of me, the Art Attack statue. There's a talking statue in Art Attack in the UK. Huge inspiration.
Uniquely British reference.
Uniquely, yeah. Uniquely British.
Yeah, about I don't know, 12% of our audience will get that one.
Honestly, I didn't really choose a character to take inspiration from because Roy is so unique. But both Roy as a character and me as a person are very interested in tropes, and a lot of folks like to try to subvert tropes, and I am not that guy. I like to lean in completely, dive in headfirst into every single trope. So Roy, the character, is going to be a gruff bad cop at some point and maybe a spy film character at some point because he really loves the tropes. But for me, Roy is the ultimate like straight man just trying to be a solid statue of a person in the middle of all these ridiculously wacky characters doing all this ridiculously wacky stuff. And he just wants things to go right. He just wants the show to go off without a hitch. He just wants the ratings to come in. He wants the interviews to go well. And he's going to do whatever it takes to try to make sure that everyone around him is going to do their part. And that's really difficult when you're hurting literal cartoon characters. So, like, especially early on, he's very much the exasperated, like, I'm just trying to keep this all together while everyone is running in all different directions all at once kind of character. And it has been such a blast. I've really been enjoying playing him.
So he's and let me comment on that, Rob, because the audience will see this in episode 4, because it's the end of the first story arc and it's the first episode where they do the show. And it is, I love it so much in every way, but the last scene is all of them at the Portside pub at an after party, and Roy and Chip have this conversation, and it's like, I'm not going to spoil it by any means, but it really, all of a sudden, the show comes to life in a huge way, and you really get to know this relationship, and it's going to go for a wild ride from there, but it's I'm the most proud of anything I've done so far of that episode, and thanks to you guys for creating it, because it is wonderful.
It really is fantastic. And like, Roy and the rest of these characters seem very one-dimensional. Roy's kind of abrasive. He's kind of a dick, but mostly he's just trying to keep control of the situation. But yeah, in episode 4, you really hear that he really does love Chip and he really does care about WSUX radio and he really does care about the people around him. He just hasn't really figured out how to express that in a non-toxic way.
No, and you sent me a line last night and I'm like, Jesus Christ, Matt, I can't put another line in this episode. But then
yes,
when I heard it, I'm like, I got to find the space for this. And then I have to respond to it. And it only added a couple seconds, but it's beautiful. And it's like, okay, that's it. That was the icing on the cake. So
interesting. So he's literally the straight man.
Yeah,
that's physically the most solid straight type of character
exactly
you could possibly
have. That's what we were going for. Yes, yeah. you have hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, yeah, very cool.
We were talking about how he's just desperately trying to keep things together. The episode I thought of was the one with the responders trying to corral both Chip and Victoria.
Well, because Chip and Victoria are both very interested in the responders for opposite reasons, right? Chip is a fanboy of all fanboys, and Victoria is very much ACAB, and you know, no cops, no responders type character. So, trying to keep them both out of the green room so that we can have an interview that is organic is a big challenge. And there was one other thing I wanted to mention.
She's like the archetypal Randian libertarian is Victoria.
Very much.
And so you see, you know, it's again, point counterpoint. You've got the Randian libertarian on one side. You've got, you know, Chip, who would love nothing more than to take a bath in liquid stars and stripes. You know, you've got these two figures that just butt heads constantly.
And I wish Linda could be on because you guys know the character. She takes it over the top like nobody can. And the language that comes out of her is like, she is a joy to have on the show. And man, it is the antithesis of Chip in every way. And of course, we're married. So it is so much fun to release all this energy. And it's fantastic.
She is my favorite of all of the cast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Barna.
And to this day, Linda's voice saying "Morons," it just like lives rent free in my head. So thanks for that, Brian. You can pass that on to Linda.
I will.
It's interesting, you guys. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff. I'm sure a lot of this stuff will make more sense to people when they get to those episodes too. But you mentioned the responders. You mentioned this will be something people will be curious about. What is the time frame this exists in? When does this happen in the lore?
Somewhere early on, I drew up a timeline, but it takes place literally right after, within a few years of the bombs dropping and shortly after 76 opens, I guess, whenever that I guess it's farther.
It's about, I guess after Wastelanders, because yeah. Julie's in it, right?
Yeah, so it is after Wastelanders. It would have to be after Wastelanders.
Yeah, it's been, if I recall correctly, it's been like 25 years by the time the events of 76. Yeah. Plus, depending on the update.
And nor does Roy, and by design, so it doesn't really matter to them.
It's a range sort of 2102, I think, is the date that we give it. We're not, it's a bit, you know, I'm sure someone will be out there going, that didn't happen until 2102.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I don't know what you're talking about. Nobody who's ever listened to my show has ever given me this is my opinion on the lore. That never happens. but I think
it's been quite liberating as writers to play it a little bit fast and loose with the exact timing, because obviously, I mean, with 76 having released as it did, and then with updates gradually pushing the date forward, apart from the most recent one for some reason, there are aspects of things that technically, as the player going through the game, you can do in 2104 that happened in 2102. You know, it's nebulous in the game. I think we really played with that. And some of us have original characters in, you know, our own written stories and role plays and things that we then bring into the show for cameos and things, and that timeline doesn't make any sense. By all intents and purposes, my child, one of the first sort of full RP characters I ever wrote, Cadogan, who's in the show, should not have been nearly old enough or with the responders for when things are happening. But we are, I think, playing with that a little bit because it allows for more scope for interaction with factions like, you know, the responders, and there's mention of the Brotherhood and the Enclave and all sorts of other groups who have contrasting opinions, particularly if you consider the Brotherhood and their kind of war against FEV, when, you know, most of Chip's friends and family are in some way mutated.
right.
You know, there's like a minor bit about, a ghoul bartender being attacked by the Brotherhood that... it's maybe something different to that, but without, you know, spoiling the episode. So we really do kind of take a little bit of liberty with the timeline just because it actually allows us to properly explore the setting without kind of shooting ourselves in the foot by going, no, it happens this time, which means we can't talk about this or this.
Right. I mean, it is all for fun. I get it. Yeah.
We have those discussions in the writers' meetings, and it's like, we try to be as faithful to the lore as we can, but we know we're going to have to break the rules at some point. And my thing is, it's a sitcom, so there's that. And don't make me go William Shatner on your ass.
there's the whole idea of like an unreliable narrator as well. We explore in the show. And you know, it's 2102 is a good year to set it. Canonically, during the sort of Fallout 76 timeline, we're not obviously going to follow everyone's Fallout 76 journey because everyone has a different Fallout 76 journey. And we're not, 100% wedded to the timeline, because if you look at 76, well, a nuke drops in Appalachia every 10 minutes,
It's, right. So, it gets a little crazy.
We do have to draw a line somewhere.
Right. It reminds me of when in our own world, in the real world, when we do some sort of, historically set story, oftentimes there are those anachronisms that just creep in, and it's almost like it's very hard to find. An example of this would be like the Odyssey, and people are like, oh, well, the armor is not of the time period, or they casted actors who don't look Greek or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but it's still a good story, and that's the whole point, right? Like, let's not get all hung up on, not everything has to be 100%
on this one too.
Historically accurate.
If I may, the anachronisms is not a new problem.
Right.
Virgil, writing the Aeneid, used Iron Age weaponry in some scenes when the Aeneid is Bronze Age. The anachronisms are a thing that's happened...
Right. It's just, that's my point. My point is it's just part of human nature when we tell stories, right? Like, those things are just there. And if you let them get in the way, then you're like, why are you even watching stories ever? Because you're always going to find something to poke a hole in, right?
Super fun to think about these things. Like, I love thinking about canon and what might happen when and where, and suddenly the ghoul is in Ohio and like, what's going on. Mm-hmm. But in the end, canon is really in our minds. right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we all interpret the story our own way. So I guess that's our way of saying don't think about it too much, unless you enjoy that sort of thing. And then by all means, think about it all you want.
Yeah, yeah. The problem I have, and this is me getting on my soapbox, having done a lore podcast for 7 years, is that people will let that get in the way. They bring their own expectations to it, to every IP, and they expect that every IP will be 100% buttoned up with no canonicity flaws, none of that stuff. And spoilers, no IP works like that. So that's an unreasonable expectation, right? But we can point out those consistencies and inconsistencies, and then we can just keep rolling with it and just enjoy the thing for what it is. You know, like, that's my perspective on it. But before we get too far into this, because we've been going for a while, we need to eventually wrap up the interview. Phil and Hazardous both haven't had a chance to talk about their characters and some inspiration, so I wanted to give you guys a shot. Phil, you have some insight into us about things in Fallout or other things that inspired your character?
Well, there wasn't anything specific in Fallout that inspired my take on the announcer guy voice, but I wanted something that really kind of would fit in the Fallout universe, the typical transatlantic voice you'd hear on the radio, like typical narrator, something that just kind of fit. But also, I kind of want to put a little bit of a spin on it, like being a disembodied voice who narrates. He kind of has insight into what's going on. Like, you know, he has his own opinions.
Nice.
So I want to make a little spin on how I deliver certain things sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, you know, just not make it just the standard announcer, but also, you know,
right,
he might.
Right. There's something underneath this. There's more. It's more than just a voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fun because it's a subtle thing you can hint to that people will slowly realize over time.
I'm not going to say anything to that comment, Tom, other than Phil, congratulations.
Cool, cool.
You won the secret prize of all the writers going, yes, yes, it works.
Cool. So
when I say that, that is a huge, huge spoiler that I swore, that I made them all swear they can't talk. Yeah. That's the one thing they can't talk about.
All right. So spoilers.
All I was going to say was, you don't know the half of it.
Yeah. The spoilers, Easter eggs,
calling,
I'm sure.
It a spoiler kind of gives some of the hand, but okay.
Well, I guess we'll have to see exactly how that goes. Hazardous, what about you? What about you with your character? I mean, you were saying that this is very new for you. What did you do to prep and get ready with it?
Actually, ironically, DJ Julie on Fallout 76 is one of my favorites. I always loved listening to her on the radio. So when I was told to basically send whatever to Chip, and they told me that DJ Julie would be perfect, I was like, oh, yes, okay,
I
let's
know this.
Go.
Yeah.
And then, I know I was requested to at least try to get as close to the sweet sounding voice that you would hear on your Pip-Boy. I tried my best. But
Hazardous, all I can say is I'm working on that episode today, and I just finished the scene with you and Maddie. I was on the floor. Because the way you, I can't say it. You're magic.
It must be really hard playing a character who is well established in the lore. And I wish that Julie had more lines in Fallout 76 since Wastelanders. I don't think they've added anything for her since. But it must be a little bit intimidating trying to play a character who's already so well established and that everyone who plays Fallout 76 is familiar with.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure on my shoulders for that one.
Yeah.
But I think what I had so much fun making that scene that he was just talking about, because my friend is Maddie, and I'm mean to him anyways.
Okay.
It was perfect.
There you go.
It is really something to behold, honestly. I mean, where there are, you know, gaps where, you know, Bethesda haven't given DJ Julie any more lines, you know, since, you know, she was brought in, we really fill those gaps with our own very unique spin on a DJ Julie. And she is, I think she's one of my favorite characters, specifically DJ Julie as played by Hazardous, because honestly, there's again a whole other dimension to the character that isn't seen in 76. And I think, I don't know, I can't say it without spoiling it, really, because it is just hilarious what we've done.
That sounds great. It sounds like you fit right in. It sounds like you're doing a great job.
I try.
Everyone's nodding. Everyone's like, yes, yes. It sounds like you guys are, this is part of what's fun about being a creator, and something that I've enjoyed in my past with all the things that I've worked on over the years, is being able to collaborate with other talented people, and the enjoyment you get when somebody else shares a cool idea or does something really well, and you're like, oh, that's great. Yeah, we should definitely use that. And then it feels like you're all building something together that you're all excited and proud about. And that really is that's the payoff from this, right? Like,
the table reads are so fun. Like, I kind of think maybe one day in the future, if we do a Patreon or something like that, we should give some access to some of the table reads, because there's so much fantastic just side talking and improving and figuring things out. And this is just such a phenomenally fun and talented group of folks that it feels so natural to just go through these scripts and chat with folks and make it our own. It's really a phenomenal experience.
That's great. Well, you mentioned improv, and we're getting close to the end of the show. So Chip said that you guys might enjoy playing an improv game.
Nailed the setup. Yes.
Yeah. So here's what we're going to do. And for our listeners, I hope you enjoy this, because this should be fun. We're going to play, we'll call it the one-up game, where you have to one-up the person before you, talking about, in this case, a specific problem. And we're going to start with Chip, and then we're going to go to CJ, and then Cal, then Phil, Hazardous, Rob, and then we're going to end on River. And Chip, you have to start with a tiny little problem, and all of you have to pick a character that you play as and respond as if you're that character. And it'll go like this. Chip will say, oh, this thing happened and I'm upset about it. And then we'll pass it to CJ, and CJ is going to acknowledge Chip's problem and then one up Chip's problem with something that's just slightly worse. And then by the time we get, we're going to repeat that pattern. And by the time we get to River, the world would be ending in some crazy way. And that's going to be up to River to decide what is the way that the world is ending. And so the each of you will one up the previous problem in some way. Make sense?
So, good luck, Phil.
All right. So Chip, kick us off as Chipmunk with your tiny little problem.
Believe this. I went over to the Portside Pub to talk to Gary to make sure that we're getting the Feral Friday discount tonight. And on the way back, I got attacked by ferals. So I pulled out my Gatling plasma and took care of him. But then I noticed that this one had this gold fork and I really wanted it. So I went over, but then he moved. So I kicked him and I stubbed my toe, man. And it really hurts.
So let me get this correct, Chip. You got attacked by ghouls.
Yeah.
It was fine. And then you stub your toe?
Yeah, because I forgot that I wasn't wearing my hiking boots. I was wearing my
Chip, Chip, you get beat to sh by Victoria on like a bi-weekly basis, and you're she's gonna beat me. You need to get in that writer's room, or she's gonna have all our asses and possibly send that death claw.
Oh, you're right.
You get in there so that I don't get attacked and ruin my chances with Victoria.
All right, well, you think you've got it bad. I was just quietly bartending in the Portside Pub, and then some doofus with a Gatling plasma went and kicked my brother. And after that, well, I tripped and I fell. I broke my nose. But the worst part of that is, I haven't even got a nose.
While all of that was happening, I was just offering irreverent commentary for whoever would listen. And somebody clearly got offended after the altercation outside the Portside Pub, because someone took a shotgun to the radio. It took me 20 minutes to find another voice box to inhabit.
I did not appreciate it. Being a Camp Lewis computer, I cannot share my voice. He's messing up my memory. No, we cannot forget all of Chip. He is wiping my memory.
Look, all you have your own problems, and that's fine. But I was there when Chip was trying to fight off those ferals. And by the way, Chip, please never try to lift a Gatling plasma again. It didn't look cool, all right? But as I was punching at one of the ferals, my fist went right through his head and onto the boulder behind him, and now my arm is gone. Like, from the wrist down, it's just gone. And a mole rat picked it up and ran away, and I gotta go deal with that, and...
Attention, citizens. Nuclear strike imminent. Please exit the area at earliest convenience. Thank you for your cooperation.
And now I've got that to deal with. I have to find this thing before that bomb drops. Just whatever you're doing, get the hell away. Let me deal with this, all right?
That's all well and good, but if you would remember that where that bomb is dropping is where I get all of my talented and otherwise super mutant actors, and now I'm going to have to find an entirely new cast. Otherwise, you will all be poor. And Nuke is going to be the last of our problems, given that I have seen Miss Hornwright unhappy.
There you are, you bastard. Give me my hand back.
Should we get in the shelter?
And then bomb explosion. Yeah, end scene.
Let's go.
Very fun, guys. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us. And if you are listening to this on a podcast platform, which you probably are, you can easily look up Chip Shot on whatever platform you're on. You most likely will be able to find it. And any last words, Chip?
No, I hope everyone enjoys the show. There's a lot of passion that goes into it from the writing staff, from the voice actors, the sound design, all of it. The community artists that are doing the thumbnails. We have a spotlight of a different community artist each story arc. So the first one was a friend of mine. The second one is Shane Baconstrip. The third one is A Dwellerner's Dog. And then Phil Lanigier is doing the spy arc, which there's the most of them. Actually, there's six episodes in that.
Wow.
So we want to showcase community artists and give them a chance. So we're really trying to share it with the community in the biggest way possible. But certainly, it's not just for Fallout fans. Anybody can enjoy the show. It is literally, an office comedy, sitcom in a big way, and it's got a lot of heart. So hopefully you'll all enjoy it, and we welcome you to the show.
If people want to either be considered for future roles or be considered for their artwork to be used on the show or mm-hmm. anything like that, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
On Discord, you can find me at Chipmunk9827, I think. They'll see me on Xbox. And they can certainly email me at, what's the best way? It's probably...
There is a specific ChipShot email account that's used mostly just for signing things in, but it's just chipshotpod@gmail.com,
okay.
Which I'll check periodically. So you can send it there as well if you haven't got the other platforms.
Awesome.
Yeah. And not
awesome.
Just roles as well and things like that. If people want us to include specific guests, maybe something mm-hmm. for them to, they can always write in and give suggestions. At the heart of it, despite all the craziness that's going on, there's all sorts of, guests that we're involving, like the responders, Rip Daring is going to feature in one. We've got a spy arc, So if there are guests that people want to see, please just, write in. Let us
awesome.
Know.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, best of luck to you guys with the show. I hope it goes well. I hope a lot of people tune in and check it out. And thanks for taking the time to hang out and be part of this. I'm going to take a quick break. I'll be back after that. So don't go anywhere. See you on the other side.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
Thanks again to Chip and his crew for joining me this week. And thanks again to all of our patrons, everybody who supports the show and keeps it going. Patreon.com/FalloutLoreCast. And welcome to... insert some clever pun here, our newest member. Thank you for joining us. And shout outs to our sentry bots, Germinator, Nova, Main Monkey, and Era. Thank you so much for your support. And to everyone else who supports the show in all the different ways that you do, or just keep coming back. If you keep coming back, thanks for being here. Also, you can help out by sharing it with your friends. You can also leave a 5-star review or leave some nice comments. And if you leave a 5-star review on Apple, I'll read it out on a future episode of the show. We don't have any new ones this week, but who knows? Maybe next week. All right. Stay safe in the wasteland. I'll see you next time. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.